I just want to take a moment to thank our fine friends at Dockers.com for sponsoring the What Shapes Us podcast. They have been the absolute masters of comfort in khakis since 1986, and we thank them. Thank them for supporting the podcast. Dockers.com. Check them out. Hi, my name is Salema Mabena Masakela. I'll say it for you one more time. Salema Mabena Masakela, and you are listening to the What Shapes Us podcast. Our guest today on the What Shapes Us podcast is a man named Chad Caruso. You hear a name like that and you're like, this dude is cool. Chad Caruso has a flow to it. He is known as the Forrest Gump of skateboarding for reasons that we'll get into shortly. I have never met him before, but I learned his story via the Instagram and was so compelled and so moved by who this guy might be that I said I got to meet him. So I sent Chad Caruso a DM, as we do these days, on the Instagram. And I said, would you be down to hang out with me for a little while and talk about your story? And you said?
Yeah, of course.
Which to me, I was like, I just figured that everyone in the world was trying to get in contact with you and get you to do something. So I wouldn't have been offended if I didn't hear back. But when I did hear back from you, I was like, I was giddy, like little kid giddy to get to talk to you.
I appreciate you having me on. I've been following you for years.
Really?
Yeah. Well, X Games stuff back in the day.
Okay.
Yeah.
For context, you recently accomplished something that's never been done before. You skateboarded across these United States. Keep it on the subject.
Yeah.
You skateboarded across the United States of America in 57 days.
Yep.
Started in Venice Beach at the Venice Beach skate park, and finished in Virginia Beach. You finished that on May 17th, 57 days. You did that with one skateboard, did not change wheels, did not change bearings, did not change trucks, one set of skateboard shoes. Two.
Halfway through, the other ones blew out.
They just blew out.
Yeah.
And you didn't have, well, I'll let you sort of set the parameters. I can go on, but you actually did the thing. But you didn't have a chase vehicle, a support vehicle.
Yeah, did it all completely solo, just me in a backpack.
What was in your backpack?
So it was just one outfit, like one change of clothes, deodorant, toothbrush, just the basics, like a little small skate tool, just in case, like a little fold-out tent, you know, really small, just, you know, couldn't find a hotel or something, got to have somewhere to camp out. Luckily, it didn't happen. But yeah, and just like the basics, really. Nothing crazy. Bare minimum.
Laptop.
No laptop. Yeah. So I was daily vlogging the whole entire trip, and every single video was filmed, edited, uploaded on my phone.
That's amazing. So before we get into the details of what you did to go across America,
yeah,
I'd like to start with your relationship with skateboarding. Where did it begin?
I think I was about 12 years old. Kid from school came over with a board, and once I saw that, I was just couldn't stop. I was like just fixated on it. When I was a kid, though, like 4 years old, my brother used to send me down the driveway, like sitting on his board. So like the seed was planted early, you know. And then once it got like reintroduced later on, that's when I like really fell in love with it.
How would you describe your relationship with skateboarding as you grew up? Because there's something interesting, I think, about going through puberty and starting your coming of age journey and the relationship with skateboarding by your side.
Yeah. Well, once I got into it, I just dropped everything else. I was like on the, you know, high school basketball team, one of the best players, and I just like couldn't go to practice anymore. Quit that, quit baseball, just like only skating. But it became like, and I also got pulled out of school because we couldn't afford to live like where we were living in New York. So me and my mom moved to Montana and all I had was my board. So it was just like my board was my best friend, you know?
What was that culture shock like for a kid who's grown up just in New York City?
Yeah.
And now you're in Montana.
It was Long Island, so not as crazy as New York, but still, you know, pretty fast paced.
One of the five. Yeah. Listen, I grew up in Staten. Yeah, I grew up in Staten Island.
Yeah.
And I'll fight anybody who tells me I didn't grow up in New York.
All right, cool. So you know, but yeah, it was, you know, you go hang out with all your friends. You're young. That's all that matters to you. You know, like your group of friends and everything. And it was just me in the middle of nowhere. Closest town was 2 hours away. Dirt road. Like, could barely skate on anything. So, yeah, it was pretty rough. I was frustrated. Yeah.
In the winters, like, doing flat ground tricks in your...
Yeah, I have to walk a mile just to, like, this crummy paved road and then just practice flat. And it's ice cold, you know, and I would just complain every day to my mom to move back home.
Did you have any other skate friends in Montana?
No. I'd go to this park, like, on the weekend or something in the city. That's it.
Sitting like Billings?
Yeah, I think it was Billings, yeah.
See, I don't
know your stuff.
I'm familiar with America. I've never been to Billings. I've been to Big Sky because I'm a snowboarder.
Yeah.
But I couldn't imagine what that was like. Did you then move back to New York?
So, yeah, I just basically acted up until she moved back home. So it was like 6 months, a year in between there. And then we moved back. My brother actually made a promise. He's like, I'll start skating again if you get mom to move home.
No way.
And I did. He never started.
So when you say acted up, can you contextualize?
She had a boyfriend out there, so I just would kind of like mess with him or just, I don't know, just get in trouble like that, you know, talk back, stuff like that.
Like, y'all are going to know that I'm here.
Yeah. And now looking back, like, you know, Montana is beautiful. I'd love to live there. But when you're that young...
Yeah.
It's like, you know, and coming from where I came from, it was tough to like adjust.
I moved from Staten Island, from New York to New England, which is far less secluded than the outskirts of Montana, but culturally was so different than like, I went to school with Method Man from like the Wu-Tang Clan. Like that was, and how I grew up was like Puerto Rican kids and black kids and Dominicans and Jews and Italians and everybody knowing each other's cultures. And next thing you know, you're in a place where like it's just suburban lunch pail, working town. Everybody's white, and no one identified. Like they thought hip hop was just something that you saw on MTV.
Yeah,
and they'd be like, "Do a head spin!" Like literally, I'd be walking down the hallway. Do you break? Yeah, do a head spin. They're like, okay,
yeah,
like weird.
That's funny.
I couldn't wait to get back to New York, and then ultimately ended up in California. Skateboarding is a type of thing where there's two types of relationships, I think, with skateboarding. You do it until you become an adult, and then you're like, oh yeah, I used to skateboard. And then there are people who, like yourself, that, no, I'm going to do this. I'm going to carry this on with me. It's not juvenile. What do you think made you choose the latter, where I'm going to keep this thing with me for my life?
Yeah. I think I was drawn to it because of it seemed like unique from all the other sports and things going on. Everything was like teams and rules, and skateboarding's very just do whatever you want, wherever you want, with whoever you want. You know, you have that like ultimate freedom. So I think that's what drew me in. It's like not kind of like the same falling in line kind of, you know, mentality.
So. And what was skateboarding like for you in your 20s? Like, what was, describe your scene?
20s? Yeah, I was just street skating all the time, like filming video parts, stuff like that, like in the core scene, I guess you'd say, you know? And then I got injured. So I more started getting into like the drinking, hanging out, partying. I'd still skate a lot, but that was creeping in, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
What kind of knee injury?
So I had a torn ACL and PCL in my left knee.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's interesting how like there's within the adult skateboarding scene, there's like the day bleeds into the night and kind of creates a loop that, depending on which part of the loop you get stuck in, kind of goes into the sunrise.
Yeah.
And it sounds like that's the part you got pulled into.
I was there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Were you there recreationally, or did it start to become more of a lifestyle?
Yeah. It escalated over time, you know? So it wasn't like in the beginning, it was just here and there, a skate event, stuff like that. And as I started like learning about the world more and getting like, I was just frustrated with like that everyone has to get a job or things like that. So the more I drank, the more I kind of was secluding myself, going down that path. Just like nothing matters, whatever, you know, just going to do my own thing. Who cares? And so it's a vicious combination if you keep doing that for long enough, you know.
You become like your own anesthesiologist.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And at what point did you have to make a choice?
So this was further down the road because I'm pretty stubborn, you know, like most skateboarders are.
try and try again.
Exactly. So I held on until I was like 28, you know. I was just refusing to just be normal in society, basically. Just kept drinking, and I got one DWI. Didn't stop me. Just kind of laughed it off, like, whatever, you know, who cares. Got the second one, and that's when I was, like, $10,000 in debt, affecting the people around me, having to borrow money, car damages, like, all this, facing jail time. So once it started bleeding into other people's lives, because I didn't care about myself, obviously, whatever, but when I was starting affecting friends and family, that's when I was like, something's got to change.
Were you a blackout drunk?
I mean, I would drink like to those levels, but I was always very aware, if that makes sense. Like I never completely blacked out, but I would drink till 6 a.m. nonstop, clear the bar. Anyone's drinks left over, I'm drinking them. You know, nothing like slowed me down.
And I would imagine that like when you still have recollection, and you like you feel like clarity of the previous night's events, what do you mean? I'm not an addict. Like
right.
I'm here. I'm yeah. I have awareness.
You're still going to work,
right?
You know, or occasionally, you know what I mean? So you're like yeah.
What caused you to, I know you said you got the two DWIs and you realized the way things were affecting your family, but what was like that moment where you're like, I have to make a change?
I think it was when I heard that I was going to be going to jail. And the lawyer was like, I don't think I can get you out of this. You know, because in New York, if you get two DWIs within like 3 years, sometimes depending on the county, it's like automatic. So I was just like, I was playing out in my head how those, you know, year, months or whatever it would be. And when I was doing that, I was just like, can't do it anymore. I got to make a shift. And I realized I was like leaning into this personality of nothing matters. Who cares? Like, it's almost funny that I didn't care about anything in life. So breaking that was tough. You know, it was like a learning curve to that. It took like, you know, some growing pains for sure.
That's interesting. Like because at a subconscious level, like, that's just how you function. Like not caring was your superpower.
Exactly.
And now you've lost this cape.
Yeah. I took it too far. You know what I mean?
Right.
It became like the poison.
When you make this change, how did your life shift? Because now you don't have your cape. Your lightsaber of booze is gone.
Yeah. It was slow. It was like, you know, I had this list of people I had to pay back, had to try to figure out how to get a job. I had dropped out of school. You know, I'm like, I have a broken arm at the time. I got into like a little bar fight.
Sweet.
So I'm like trying to apply for jobs with like no education, nothing, you know, and like just like looking all disheveled. So I can't even get a job at like the worst places, you know. So I'm going on Craigslist trying to find things and just slowly claw my way back. So I started working at like a little taco place doing to-go orders in the back and just like climbed my way up and saved money and started chipping away, paying people back. That was like the first thing.
Restitution.
Right. Making it good with everyone and stuff like that.
Wow. And yeah. You're 29, 30?
Yeah. 28, 29. Yeah.
Wow. That's incredible. So you pay everybody off and now you've got a little momentum. You got to figure out what's your, I guess, your new North Star.
Yep.
Of life. What did that become?
That actually came first. Because when I made this change to like switch the way I was living, I was like, I have to have something positive to focus on.
Mm.
And something like interesting, exciting. So I chose YouTube. And I had never used social media before this. I like was against it.
You were anti.
Yeah, I was anti everything. Right.
Fuck
right.
That.
Exactly. So I had to learn all this stuff. I leased a phone. I had no money. I was just like, all right, I need this phone to pursue the passion. So leased like an iPhone so I could film with it. Learned everything. And that was like, yeah, like you said, like the North Star, like something to focus on.
What kind of content did you start making?
So the first thing was just tutorials. I was like, all right, I've been skateboarding for almost 20 years at that point. Let me give back anything I've ever learned. Like this knowledge is, you know, spent all these years doing it. Why waste it?
Right.
Let me give it back. So I just started doing trick tips. Every mini ramp trick I could go through, I just cataloged them and tried to be as like in depth and detail as I could.
Which is interesting because skateboarding is the kind of thing where it's almost, for a long time, it was almost uncool to reveal the ways of the force. Like, no, you got to learn the hard way.
Yeah.
But then YouTube sort of kind of changed that where it's like, no, we're going to open source the thing. Like it's skateboarding is hard enough as it is just to learn to do. But then it can really be hard to for a kid or anyone to like feel like they can break into the club because you look at it and you're like, it's the hardest thing on earth. And no one's even like giving out what the basics are.
Yeah. Yeah. And then that was one of the realizations too I had when I got sober. It's like, oh, all you've ever done was like take from skateboarding.
Mm.
You know? Go to contests, parties, like enjoy, like you've never like given back really. So that's when I started like trying to petition for skate parks and make trick tips and things like that. But yeah.
And after a while, it was able to make you, it sounds like after a while, you're able to like, all right, I'm able to kind of live and function off of this.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still like working on that.
Yeah.
But it was more just, it fulfilled me.
Right.
More than anything. I didn't even care about the money. It was like staying sober and staying happy and like positive and helping people. And that, if you have that, like that's all that matters. Other stuff will get figured out, you know?
That is the truth, man. Like if you can get into that place where, like for me, when I figured out what it was that I had to give as a storyteller and that no one else has that to give. I used to work at Transworld Skateboarding. And I had lost jobs and I worked at Planet Earth Skateboards and a bunch of other companies, but I couldn't really figure out what my deal is. But once I came to that realization that like, oh, I'm here to tell everybody else's story, it just gave me direction. I didn't think that it would end up being a career or that I'd have a platform where I could be in a situation like this, amplifying someone like you's, your story.
Yeah. But sometimes it takes time, you know, like, I think it's you get a little older, you have perspective on your whole life and the things you're good at and like you feel natural at.
Yeah, it was right around 30 for me as well.
Mm-hmm.
So where would you say you were at when you decided now you've got this momentum? And I love this theme of you've been taking from skateboarding for so long. Now you figured there's a way for you to give. It's in turn giving you joy and also helping you to maintain your sobriety. It sounds like you found a different way to get, I wouldn't want to say fucked up, but like to feel high.
Yeah.
Like from this giving era.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a version of the same thing really, but it's obviously more positive and it helps people.
Yeah.
It doesn't hurt myself.
I'm partying. I'm exactly, like, right. I'm actually partying in this, but I'm not going to punch anybody in the face.
Right.
and get any DWIs.
Yeah. It's an interesting evolution too, because you think like, I give up drinking, all fun goes away, you know, but it's, and it kind of does, because you have to adjust, get new friends and everything. It's like a whole life shift. But once you make it past that hurdle, it, everything starts to become more full, more clear. It's like a lot easier. Like life becomes like almost simple. Yeah.
I love that as you go through this shift of sort of realizing your balance between dark and light, and that you want to operate in this space of light, that the force, if you will, that is skateboarding is still central to it. Like you're finding a new way to use this thing that is integral to who you are.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a choice to make when I was like restarting my life at that point at 28 or whatever it was. It's like, I can get like a real job just being an adult now. You know, there was no money or real even future in skateboarding at that point. It was kind of stupid for me to do that. But I was like, one, I just love skateboarding forever. And two was, I already invested like 20 years into this. It's tough to climb that, like, you know, to keep going. Like, not many people can share things that they've learned from 30 years, 40 years. Like, that's valuable for everyone, like, yeah, to keep pursuing that. So I just figured just keep going and keep learning.
That's amazing, because it wasn't skateboarding's fault.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Where were you at when this idea came into your head to skateboard across America?
Let's see. I think I was at home. I was just talking to my cousin, Brett Conti. He's a YouTuber. So we both make videos, and we were going to skate across Italy for charity. That was like what we were talking about. And then COVID happened, so we never did it. Obviously, Italy's much thinner. So that's like 2 days, you know what I mean? Or something. Not, you know, 2 months. So, but yeah. So that, like, you know, we never ended up doing it, but the idea stayed in my head. Kept thinking about it. So I started Googling it. And then I saw no one ever really, like, legitimately done it. And once I saw that, I just became, like, laser focused on it.
What, when you say laser focused, what did that involve?
Months and months of just Googling. Like, cause I never even really had a cruiser. So I'm like studying soft wheels, sizes, like really learning about everything. Board sizes, like the height off the ground, just everything. Cross country trips, looking up runners, bikers,
like
what's
people
dangerous, right, like all that stuff. So that 6 months, a year, just kind of slowly building up to it, like looking, you know, planting the seed.
That's really, really, was there anything within that research that you learned about from other people's experiences that made you think, shit, this might not be a good idea?
Honestly, no. And if there was, I usually just block it out. I'm like, yeah, I'll be good.
What did you, like, from a wheel standpoint, like for a general audience who doesn't skateboard, what did you discover you needed?
Okay, so like a skate wheel is very hard and small, generally speaking. So I've ridden that for 20 years. So I'm going to much bigger and softer wheels, because you're going over like really rough concrete stuff called chip seal. It's like very, very grainy. It's brutal. So you need soft wheels to roll over that stuff.
Otherwise, it just...
Yeah. Oh, you'll be crying like one day in. Yeah, it's hard wheels, you know.
All right. And then board-wise?
So I just grabbed the board that I had in my trunk, like someone gave me. It was kind of a cruiser, like almost like an egg-shaped board.
Mm-hmm.
Round, you know, rounded in nose and tail.
But still had trickable nose,
right,
and tail.
It's basically a regular skateboard, a little bit wider.
How wide?
I think it was 9.5 inches.
Okay.
So, I mean, some guys that are bigger, they ride that.
That's what I ride.
There you go.
That's a normal, right, skateboard for me.
I ride like an 8.5, so okay, it's not much different, you know? So yeah, and the trucks, obviously independents just to match up, and SKF ceramic bearings.
Why ceramic bearings?
Because, I mean, for the most part, they don't rust.
Right.
So,
and you're going to be encountering, yeah, rain and who knows what else.
Yeah, bunch of rain, sand, all sorts of stuff.
Yeah. Did you pre-plan your route?
Yeah. So okay, I enjoy doing things like on spur of the moment, figuring it out. That's like my favorite thing to do. I almost feel relaxed in those situations.
Mm.
But the route, I was like, I have to have some sort of structure to follow. So I downloaded this app called Komoot, and they allow you to kind of plan around dirt roads, make sure you don't run into those and, you know, things like that. So I just made sure I'll be hitting a hotel roughly every 50 miles. I didn't even plan where I was going to stay. I just like grazed over it. I'm like, okay, there's some around. I'll be good.
So you, before you even did it, you said, okay, I got to average pushing. What size were your wheels?
68 millimeter.
I'm going to...
Which isn't even that big.
It's not really. That big. That's why I'm just trying to comprehend what you're talking about. And you made a decision that in order for me to do this, I got to push about 55 miles a day.
My goal from the beginning was I'm going to do this in 2 months. So 60 days, 50 miles a day. You know, that's it. That was my goal. So I would never skate under 50.
You started in Venice.
Yeah.
What was that? Was it? Did you practice?
So yeah, leading up to it, there was this path down by the beach by my house, really smooth, just paved. So I'd go down there with my new cruiser and just like, you know, 10 miles, be super sore. A couple days later, 20 miles, you know, body's getting used to it. 40 miles, and I'm starting to get into it now. I'm like really enjoying it, you know, because there's a wall where everyone's just like, why are you doing that? It's so many miles. Like, they look at it as like torture. But once you get past that, like, have the fun with it and understand what it is and like the peace of being out there, you know, start to really get into it. He's like, no, I don't know what you're talking about. Start to really
get. I think I like, I just think about, you know, I live in Venice and maybe I'll skate from Lincoln Boulevard to the skate park. Like, I have flat feet.
Okay.
Like, my arches, or lack thereof, to and fro are going to be sore. And maybe like for me, I'm really susceptible. If I do long pushes, I'm susceptible to Achilles tendonitis in my push foot.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're talking about doing that for, you know, 55 miles. What was, all right, from the outset, where did your body start to be like, hey, what's going on here?
I'd say day one. Day one. I mean, I had been doing a couple of 50 mile skates, so I did like, I don't know, 5 maybe before that. So I wasn't like completely far into it, but not every day.
It's like ultra marathon training, but you're training for essentially 57, 60 ultra marathons.
And I can't practice like I'd want to because I have work. So I'm waking up at 7 a.m. It's middle of winter. I'm going down to the water where it's extra cold.
In New York,
right? Skating 50 miles. I'm out there for like 5-6 hours. Come back at noon, ice my feet, like have a meal real quick, and then go into work at 3 to like 11 at night.
Where were you working?
Like a restaurant. Okay. So I'm on my feet all day and night, you know.
This is crazy. I would like to take this moment to thank our friends at Dockers for supporting the What Shapes Us podcast. Yes, Dockers khakis. Did you know that some of your favorite street skateboarders and BMX riders, when they're out here in these streets performing maneuvers that make you go, ah, yeah, they're wearing Dockers. Why? Durability and comfort. If you feel great, you shred great. That's literally an ancient proverb. And Dockers has been doing its thing since 1986, so you know their pants stand the test of time. Check them out at Dockers.com. The other thing that you did that I read in the Jenkum article, which that's where I discovered you, was I think it was partway through your trip and someone came and met you in Arkansas.
Yep.
To be like, got to see what this deal is. But he said that, and then I looked on your Instagram, you were doing a flat ground trick at the end of every day.
Yeah.
Like real tricks.
Yeah. Which I ended up kind of regretting, actually. Like, it was really fun and I loved doing it. But then you got a picture like day 45, you skated 80 miles.
And you're like, backside flip.
A month and a half. And you're like, the tricks are progressively getting harder.
Right.
And I'm running out of sunlight and I'm 30 tries in. I'm like, what am I doing right? I got to edit the video because I'm daily vlogging, uploading. So I got to get to the hotel and like get this done, you know? So just started creating a little bit like a pressure. Also, the wheels were getting so chunked by that time. Towards the end, I was like scared to do tricks. I thought they were just gonna like fall apart.
Did you have backup set?
I did, but
You had a thing.
Yeah, I just wanted. I thought it'd be cool. Like one board, make like a guy and a board.
Right.
You know,
and
that's it. Nothing else.
I got spare wheels in my backpack, but I don't want to use them.
Yeah, that was for if I'm just in the middle of the desert, something happens, like I can keep going.
What do you? So that first night.
Yeah.
All right, I've done 55 miles. Did you know where a hotel was going to be, or did you?
So it was a little trouble. I thought it'd be easier, and I realized, like, oh, this one's full because I think it was a Friday.
Mm.
So a little more booked than normal.
Right.
So I'm, like, looking around. It's getting late, but I ended up finding one and got to the hotel. I was like, I don't think I could daily vlog, like. That was the plan, but once I finished that first day, I was like, there's no way.
Now I got to sit, focus, and edit and tell a story of my day.
Right. So picture 8 to 12 hours of skating, sweating, you're like fried in the sun, your eyes are burnt out, and then you're just going to stare at your phone for another 4 or 5 hours or whatever it is, you know?
Was there at any point, especially in I imagine those first couple weeks, as your body is like, why are we still doing this? Are you starting to have like physical concern?
That was more in the beginning.
Right.
Because my body really wasn't used to it. So all the shin splints and things like that were more in the beginning. Just like brutal shin splints. Like, I don't know if you ever had them, but some of the worst pain.
I had them when I was a kid in gymnastics, and like, it just hurts to walk.
Yep.
Let alone to push your skateboard for 55 miles.
Exactly. I have to wake up and just be like, all right, we're going, you know? And I started to learn. 5-10 miles in, maybe adrenaline, or you get warmed up, it just kind of goes away.
Like the pain
I remember the day specifically too. Like I was like 50-60 miles in, there was no hotel. I was just in pain, so much shin pain, and then it just went away. Like I just like broke through to another level, and then I was just in the zone for like another 10 more miles. Just kept going.
What was the longest day you did?
80. Two times.
How would you describe your mental state? Because this is a deep redundancy to what you're doing. And at a certain point, I imagine just like the road and landscape, you're not like, oh, wow, look at those trees. Like it just, there's a requirement of like a lock-in, I imagine.
Yeah, I mean, you got to be fully aware all the time. People have died doing that, you know, many people. So you got to be just no, you know, trucks flying by you, like right next to you. Sometimes I have no shoulder at all. So I'm in the lane and it's a highway. So people are going like 70 miles an hour, you know. At certain points, I would skate head on to the trucks and make sure they saw me ahead and just like confidently go straight at them and be like, just wave them over. And like that seemed the safest because like they could see me, you know, I was making them change lanes. So
like making them.
Yeah.
Like get out of your way.
Yep. So it just depends on the road and, you know, I had to figure it out, but
wow. You know,
it's definitely, you know, dangerous out there. And then you got to push switch too, because your one leg can't like sustain that whole time. So before I left, I learned to push switch. I was always okay at it, but I got like really good at it. But when you think you're good, like throw some pebbles, you know, trucks flying by and you find out you're not very good at push and switch very quickly.
Any falls? Like any bad crashes?
A couple. Honestly, though, I did pretty well. Like I didn't fall too much. I'd say like 2 or 3 times. Just like random, just went to step off my board and my foot got caught on the nose and then just belly flopped flat on my face. All my stuff falls out of my bag, you know. But nothing too crazy.
Injuries?
Yeah, just scuffs on the arm, you know. For a skater that's jumping down like 12 stairs like their whole life.
Minor.
It's like, yeah, whatever. Yeah.
What was the, I guess there's the, like as I said before, like there's just depth of monotony that I would picture for myself. Where did you go? What were you thinking about on these insanely long 8 to 12 hour missions?
Yeah. So like that whole quitting drinking journey and like being sober, it's kind of a version of the same thing. It's like you're taking away all these things that, you know, they're blocking everything out. All the honest feelings, thoughts, things you need to face, they're distractions. So we have so many ways of distracting ourselves. So getting sober, you're just forced to continue to learn and grow and just examine things for what they are. And that's, it's kind of the version of the same thing. You know, you're out in the skate for 7 hours. You can only listen to so much music. You know what I mean? You're forced to examine yourself, reflect on old, you know, things you might have been hung up on or stuff like that. So.
What type of things did you deal with or come to like realization of?
I mean, there's so many and they're all like fleeting, you know, but I say one of the main ones was just like not caring what people think, you know, and just seeing like all the comments roll in every single day and I'm just skating, thinking about it all day, you know, and I'm just like, wait, like three people, like not many people have crossed the United States before, like, but I'm getting advice constantly. People tell me what to do. And you just have to find in yourself that you know what it is that you're doing. It's your mission, your life. And not everyone has had the same experiences or perspective. So they think they're helping, maybe they're judging it, but ultimately you have to have that resolve in yourself.
Yeah, I imagine there's a two-edged sword to blogging every day. As people are learning your story, more people are showing up to be like, what's this? Who's this guy? What's he doing? And the Monday morning, the armchair quarterback syndrome for something like this must be insane. And like you said, well-intended, but everyone and their mother being like, right. No, bro, like you got to do exactly, this or you got to do that. What did you learn? And this is the thing I think I was like most curious about. Like America right now is a most interesting place. How we find ourselves in this year of 2023, where as like for me as a little kid, you just think of all the ways that you think in which we would be far more advanced, not just from a technological side, which we are, but just like in how we deal with each other in humanity.
Clearly,
the old roots of what's built this country are going to take a lot longer to sort of shake away for us to see each other as the same. But I really wonder what it was like for you as you're going through all of these different places, not seeing them on the news or on social media. Like, what did you learn about America from a people perspective?
Yeah, I think with the internet, it's amazing. There's a lot of great things that come out of it, but your feed is a lot of times based on like negative things. So you're getting stuff thrown at you all the time. And that's what you end up thinking the world is like. It's like all these cop fighting videos or people doing crazy things. And that's what you go out thinking about every day. You know, but from my experience, when I'm out there, all I see is kindness. And if I approach it with kindness, that's what I get back, you know, so.
Describe sort of the type of interactions that you had.
Yeah. I think, I can't remember what day it was, but somewhere in the beginning, this older couple came out, brought me lunch on the side of the road. They were like in their 70s, I think. They'd been sober for like 40 years. Loved what I was doing. Talked with them.
They found you?
On the road. Yeah. And gave me this like really nice lunch. I was like starving, you know, sweating. And that kind of kickstarted like people just constantly coming out, meeting up with me, whether it was strangers or people that watched the videos. And I'd have cars stopping just randomly. You need water? You need a ride? Like, you know, and it was endless, really, the amount people were willing to give.
What did that fill you with in real time? Because I imagine when you went out to do this, you didn't have any expectations of that.
Yeah. A lot of times people assume like, well, there are points where you just wanted to quit or like you were done with it. And when I had experiences like that, like how could I ever quit? You know, and like that was just happening every day, whether it was YouTube comments or in person. So it just like fueled me, You know, just seeing that.
Did folks come out and like want to skate with you for a little while?
Yeah. Yeah. It was a bunch of people. One guy actually did like 5 miles, skated all the way back to his car. Yeah.
So paint the picture for, if I have it right. You'd be skating along. People are following you on social media. Mm-hmm. They get an idea of where you're going to be.
Yeah.
So these people come out looking for you.
Looking. And sometimes they were like, we waited all day yesterday. We thought you were going to be here. Like the next day they found me. And then they'll, you know, like, yeah, we were driving around all day. And then they'll skate with me for like, you know, 15 minutes and we'll just talk.
Wow. Mm-hmm. What was it like with the dude who went with you for 5 miles? Like, why did he want to do that?
Well, this was constant throughout. Most of the people that met up had beat addiction themselves or knew someone that passed away, which was his, like, one of his good friends, I believe, passed away from addiction. So just talk about stuff like that, and people, yeah, just psyched that I'm bringing attention to it and like doing something positive. I was able to like get out of that hole, you know.
That's just incredible.
It was something else to see, man. Like, even the comments, you know, people saying in real time, I'm getting sober from this series. Like right now, like I just quit. I'm working on, you know, I'm quitting pills or whatever it is. All comment for everything about how they're quitting.
So you'd come home from a hell day.
Yeah.
You're doing your thing. You upload, you knock out your trick, and you're looking at comments and someone's saying, because of what you're doing, I'm making the decision to let go. Enter into sobriety.
Right. Which when you see in that makes the skate like easy. You're getting that feedback and you're like, that's all I gotta do to like help people. Obviously it's hard. It's not as easy as that's all I gotta do, but it gives you that motivation.
I know you said that, you know, you never had any intentions of quitting. It sounds like you are a wonderfully stubborn human being, which either serves you for ruinously or also for good.
I've learned how to channel it.
Right.
Somewhat.
Yeah. But what was the lowest point?
Okay. I think I know. There was probably a couple here and there, but it was the first day it rained. So I had this crazy streak of 30 days, no rain.
And you're like,
what's happening right
I'm
now?
I'm out here. The universe is like, it's got me.
Looking out, yeah. So day 31, rains. I'm like, cool. I was overdue for this. No big deal. Got like a little, that was one of the things I packed was like a very small poncho, plastic. You know,
not like a high-tech, no, like Patagonia rain vest.
The wind's blowing, so I'm just like blown up. Like it's all the rain's coming in, not doing its job. It just looks funny. But yeah, I could deal with that. But all day in Texas, chip seal, which is like the grainiest ground you can imagine. I'm pushing downhill. Like I'm not even.
You're not rolling downhill.
I need to push to get downhill.
It just sounds like.
Picture that for 55 miles all day long. Didn't change once.
And that's also vibrating through your whole body.
Yeah. I'm talking like, and it would get, you'd think it was the worst you ever saw, and then it would get worse. And I'm not moving. If it's a little uphill and I'm pushing, I'm not moving. So I would just like get off the board and just stand there and be like, but then what are you going to do? Like, you can't just like. You got to get to the hotel.
What are you going
to
do? Stop.
I don't know. I was just like, I have to get to the hotel. Like that's, you know, right. And I was on and off the board all day long. It was like the most frustrating 50 miles, you know?
And at no point at all, did you just decide I'm going to pick up and walk this part?
Never. No. I skated every inch. Yeah.
Every inch.
No skitching, nothing. Yeah.
None of it.
Mm-hmm. I made a point too, even if there was like a little, like if I had a conversation with someone and we kind of shuffled around or something, I would like walk back 5 feet just in my own head. You're like, just so I knew I covered every.
Just for your own moral compass.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's just incredible. Food. What'd you eat?
So I started good. I started eating like, you know, trail mix, little healthier things. But you start getting into the middle of nowhere And all there is a Super 8 and a McDonald's, like if you're lucky. So I have like a couple of hours to edit this video. What are you going to do? Like you can't go to a restaurant. So I'm just like eating McDonald's every day, you know? It was weird too. At the end of the day, I would be like craving an ice cold Coke. And I don't drink like soda much. So I don't know if my body was just like needed sugar or whatever, but yeah, it's interesting.
So did you give yourself the Coke?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be like the first thing I did when I was finished. That'd it's almost like a reward at the like end of the beer. Day. Yeah, exactly. Basically, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Energetically, did you sort of, were you able to sort of like, you're doing this weird gas station nutrition, right?
Yeah.
So I imagine like your biofeedback of like a bunch of shit food, you're able to kind of learn what shit food helps you perform?
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't eat basically in the morning because you just don't want anything, right. Or me, at least anything going on, no movement, no, right. You know, you don't have to go to the bathroom in the middle of the desert.
Yeah.
So I would basically eat nothing. And then by noon, I would just eat like a protein bar, a beef jerky, like solid things that mm-hmm. would fill you up. And then sometimes I wouldn't even eat lunch and then just save it for dinner.
Did you have any bowel emergencies in the middle of nowhere?
I had two. It was pretty good for all those hours out there. Yeah.
Two number twos. Yep. We're like, we don't have a choice.
Yeah.
We out here.
I'm very good with that stuff, and I could not hold it. I had to hop a fence and like hide behind some bushes. Yeah. Trucks flying by, you know.
I started thinking about it earlier today because I ran the New York Marathon.
Okay. Props for that. That's one of my goals.
Well, I'm pretty sure you could do that in your sleep. Like, I'm embarrassed to say.
Running's
like,
a little different, you know?
Yeah, but clearly, here's the thing. It requires, there's a mental fortitude. Like, yep. No matter how hard you train for a marathon, there's a certain point, for me, it was like after mile 19, where you're just like, die. Like, if you take me now, I'll actually be good. I'll feel fulfilled.
Yeah.
Because the idea of taking another step forward is just, it's a death sentence. And I got these thousands of death sentences left to go. By the time I cross the finish line, I'm just destroyed. It took me a week to recover.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just, like, the rashes and the chafing and the toenails. And
that was another
thing. Take me through, like, the places in your body that you learned about that you didn't know existed.
It's kind of funny. Your body adapts, you know? So I'm doing that every day. So like some of the things that would chafe, like my nipples and stuff like that, that would be gone after a while. Like they just get stopped. Like hardened. Yeah. Like
I have super nipples now.
Yeah. Just used to it. I wore these like swooshy pants that were kind of closed on the bottom. So didn't have good circulation.
Mm.
I was going through the desert in the sun all day.
Musty.
Yeah, so I'd be like
humidity.
Sometimes I'd be rolling, like if I get it downhill, I'd just drop my pants, just like air it out for like a couple of minutes. Yeah, but yeah, inside the thighs was where I got the most chafing because I think like boxers and material rubbing together, stuff like that. Yeah, that was really it, though. I'd say
you had an incident though with an animal.
Which animal? I mean,
you had more than one.
Yeah. All I had a coyote chase me. It wasn't anything crazy, right. But yeah.
But he was
darting after me. Yeah. At first I was like, oh, it's cute. Like a little dog. And started getting a little closer and like booking it. I'm like, it's probably friendly, but I'm not going to find out. I just booked it and got away.
And he was over it. Yeah. And he also didn't, if usually where there's one coyote.
Yeah. Well,
the homies are out there.
That's what I heard. If it's a pack, like you're in trouble. That single guy, you're probably right.
What a horrible way to find to like to gain notoriety. Like man who almost skateboards right? across America dies at the hand of a pack of coyotes.
Kind of a funny story though. If you're a friend of mine, like yeah, dude, my friend skated across America, died got attacked eaten. By a coyote.
How do you do? Well, he got eaten by a bunch of coyotes. Yeah. That's some legacy shit. For
honestly,
sure.
I was thinking about the animals more than anything else before I left. I was like, are there going to be bears, snakes? Like, what's going to, you know? That's what I was most worried about.
You see snakes?
So I think I left like just before it really ramped up.
Mm.
People were saying they'll be all over the road. I knew people that ran across the country and they had to stop for like a couple of weeks, got bit. So
like random rattlers.
Yeah. I saw dead ones on the road, like I don't know, 20, 30 of them, but I never saw one live. So lucky.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
But then there was the moth.
The moth.
Of all the things
to be scared of, did not think that I'd run into a moth.
What happened?
All right. So all day I'm skating uphill, finally get to a downhill. I'm like, all right, I'm just going to be chilling right now, put on some of my headphones, relax. Well, actually, no headphones. Wish I was wearing headphones. I was about to. And I'm rolling downhill, and I see this moth coming like full speed at me. So I just like go to move my head straight into my ear. So I think the velocity of him like flying at me and me coming downhill lodged him into my ear because this thing was huge. Otherwise, it couldn't have got in there. So I immediately jump off my board. I think it goes flying downhill. No idea where it is. And I just start shaking my ear. It's like ripping at it, and my ear's raw because I'm in the sun all day.
Right.
Like, you try to put suntan lotion on it, but like, how many times can you, you know,
reapply?
Keep on top of it. So I'm ripping, freaking out, and then I just stop and I'm like, wait, you gotta record this. So I just drop my phone, put it on the ground recording, and then I go back to just viciously like shaking my ear, holding my nose, trying to blow the thing out. Nothing's working. So maybe 5-10 minutes go by. I start Googling. That's when I'm like, wait, is this like dangerous? Like, this thing gonna plant, like start, you know, leaving babies in my head? Like, what's going on? So found out it was okay, probably. And then a viewer rolls up and he's like, yo, what's up, man? You wanna skate? I'm fucking hyped. I'm gonna go park my car. I'm coming back. I'm like, actually, I got like a moth in my ear right now. It's like, okay, cool. I'll see you later. Didn't even acknowledge it at all. Yeah.
This dude who was looking to skate with you.
Yeah. He must have thought it was like the craziest thing, or he misheard, or like maybe something funny, like it wasn't like an emergency. But yeah, just like brushed right by it.
He's like, oh,
okay,
cool.
Yeah. So comes back a couple minutes later, and I'm just like, all right, I guess this thing lives in my head now. Just gonna, yeah, he's coming along on the trip. So yeah, just started skating with the guy.
Oh, so he came back.
Yeah, he came back, skated with him like a mile or two. He goes to his car, say goodbye, film with him, stuff like that. A couple miles later, another guy, tell him, same thing, doesn't acknowledge it at all, just like keeps talking, catching up, all this stuff.
I have a moth in my ear. Sick, yeah. Bro, that's cool. Yeah. Sick, how far you want to go?
Exactly, yeah, just like that. So skate with him, having a conversation with him. Starting to get a little worried. You know, this thing's flapping around in my ear.
You can feel it.
Oh, it's still flying alive. It's so uncomfortable.
It's not dead.
Whole time, I'm like just skeeved out, you know. But just, I know in my head, what are you going to do? What's the point of freaking out? You're going to have to keep skating. You got to get somewhere. So I just keep going and deal with it, you know. Yeah.
What's
all right, so I keep going. Third guy shows up. I tell him, he kind of brushes by it too, and I keep talking with him, but then at the end, he had his car there. He was like stopped. That was the guy who told me he was waited with his son the day before, missed me.
Ah.
Waited again, same spot. I was like, dude, I'm going to like set a marker here. You think you could take me to urgent care?
So you made a marker,
yeah.
How far you were.
Same way I do at the end of the day. I'd like leave my mark in the ground,
mm-hmm.
and like clock back in and out.
Mm-hmm.
So clocked out. Took me to urgent care. I show up, all the girls, like 5 girls that work there, they're all like freaking out, laughing. Oh, like, YouTuber, that's so cool. Oh, this story's awesome. All right. Okay, guys, like, can we get this thing out of my head now, please? Like, this is awesome, but like, yeah. So 20 minutes later, they're trying to like flush it out, get it out, find out it's a huge moth.
Like massive.
Yeah. Big, like size of a quarter, maybe.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it was alive.
It was alive when it came out, yeah. No. Still flapping around, yep.
No way.
Yep.
So get that cleaned up.
Yeah, get it clear, take some pictures with everyone, and then head back to my route and just start skating again. Finish out. I think I had like 20 more miles left in the day.
No yeah. way.
My ears all like raw. And just, yeah. And I'm just laughing at that point, you know? Not even mad or like, because when stuff like that happens and you're making videos, it almost makes it funner. It's like everyone's going to be laughing at this shit, you know?
That's amazing. And then you do another 20 miles on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
As your story builds, and again, this is where, like, when you tell these stories, you just can't not think about Forrest Gump. Like, modern day skateboarding, Forrest Gump, people meeting you on the side of the road, these incidents, bringing you food. I saw at one point, like, on your Instagram, people are giving you money.
Yep. A couple times, yeah.
I mean, as you're getting closer and closer to the goal, I imagine more and more folks are showing up.
Yeah, it started ramping up. I didn't know if that was because I'm hitting like more cities. You know, it was hard to tell. But now looking back, it like definitely was ramping up because people were seeing the videos. So it was more common to meet up. Like, you know, in the beginning, people didn't know if that was cool or not, you know. So that couple kind of broke the ice.
Right.
It started ramping up ever since.
So in the beginning, people were giving you space.
Yeah.
Then someone was like, let me see if this dude like is down for engagement.
Also, just kind of gauging it. Like, is this real? Is this dude really doing this? Like, you don't know a couple days in, like, is this legit?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Is, out here for likes. Right. You're gonna tell us you pulled a hammy or something.
Exactly right.
But like and subscribe anyway.
Exactly.
I got plenty more good content for you.
Yeah, no.
Wow. Local news are starting to show up.
Yeah. Yeah. I think once in Phoenix and like Tennessee, a couple times they were popping up here and there.
Man.
Yeah.
When you finally get to, before I ask that question, best states and why?
All right. I think California and Arizona. I just love the desert and like Joshua Tree and all that stuff, which that was the hardest day of the whole trip, climbing from Palm Springs to Joshua Tree.
Yeah.
But it was also the most rewarding and some of the most scenic stuff, you know? So I just like being in the desert. I'm from New York. It's super humid. So that like
dry,
cool, like the heat didn't even bother me really. Almost felt cool, you know? But yeah, I just love the scenery out there, being out there. The most desolate points were there. It was like 120 miles, no service, hotels, gas stations, like nothing, just me.
Did you have any water issues?
One day, yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. There was one point where the only stop the whole day was, it's like this scenic thing. People, it's like everyone throws their shoes on it, little concrete slab. My only spot where there was shade the whole day, so I stopped there. I'm out of water. You don't realize, like, New York 3 gallons or 3 liters is a lot different than the desert. You dry out much quicker out here than you do somewhere else. So I ran out of water and...
In the desert.
And I'm just meeting people that luckily are stopping at this tourist attraction. I'm like, hey, nice to meet you. Can I buy a water off you? And they're just like, here, take this. Take this. Here's a Coke, some banana bread. Some dude gave me like 4 waters, so I just like restocked there and like chilled out, and then I was good.
Lucky you didn't die.
As long as there's, see, that's the thing. Like, you could be nervous about it, but as long as there's like a car or two, I know that like people are gonna look out for me.
Right.
If I'm in an emergency and there's like someone around, I'll be okay.
And that was like it sounds like a thematic thing that you learned about the country. Like, actually, folks are looking out.
Yeah. Yeah, everyone's just, and then they're just interested too. It's like, what are you doing out here?
What?
You know, yeah, I want to hear the story.
Why? Well, why are you doing that for?
Exactly. Yeah, and they're just happy to help.
Did you not have anything better to do? Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Raise it. And you were raising money.
Yeah, for like addiction awareness and mental health
organization.
Yeah, it's called Natural High.
Mm-hmm.
So they're in classrooms in all 50 states, and they encourage kids to, you know, find a passion like skating or something like that, where, you know, you're focused on a hobby, a passion, something you love, instead of just like trying to quit for no reason or it's bad for you, you know?
Like, fall down, them. Yeah. Get back up, fall down, get back up.
Exactly.
Apply that to life.
Yep.
Get to be the person you deserve to be.
Exactly.
That's awesome. How much money did you raise?
So almost 50,000 in total. Yeah. And then I did like merch too.
Right.
My brother threw up a little merch store because I was like too busy to do anything. So we donated like a portion, was it like 25% of that too. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
What was it like at the finish? That last day.
It was, I mean, I could guide you through the whole last day because it was kind of like a roller coaster.
Let's do the last day.
Yeah. So it started where it was the last moment where I'd kind of be by myself. I'm just like about to be running into all these newscasters and people. And I'm having to think about all this. So it was kind of cool just being out there and realizing that was my last moment alone.
57 days.
57 days, basically completely
virtually solitary, other than like a mile or two high five from folks here and there.
Checking into a hotel. But other than that, yeah, I'm alone. So it was like a cool lesson. I'm seeing all these thoughts come in. What are you going to say when they interview you? Like trying to plan, oh, is the video going to be good? It's the last one. Everyone's been building up to this. It's going to be, you know, you have all these thoughts come in. And that's where the 57 days is like a training. You learn to watch all these thoughts come in, and instead of getting hung up on them and have anxiety, you just learn to let them go. Realize you can't control it. That moment's not there yet. So it's almost like a meditation. You're learning to observe the thought, let it go. Observe, let it go. You know?
Not almost. Like
You are.
Inadvertently, you did like the deepest 57-day like meditation camp for yourself that a person could do.
Yeah. So that's why a lot of people look at it as, why are you putting yourself through that? And I almost look at it as the polar opposite. First, I'm like strengthening my mind, and life is becoming easier because of this. Everything I'm ever going to face after this is going to be simple, you know?
And I love that your body sort of went with that.
Yeah.
And therefore the pain and all the things that you think would be like are going to saddle you for the duration just went away.
Your body's like, okay, I guess that's what we're doing now.
Okay, mind.
You have to adapt. Yeah.
Yes, you're in charge, mind.
Yeah. Yep.
Don't fuck it up for us, mind.
Yeah. I mean, it would still act up here and there, you know, but for the most part, yeah.
Like, so that last day, these thoughts are starting to fill in your head. You know, you're okay, I'm about to not be alone.
Yeah. And then it started ramping up, like one person to meet up, another person. And it was like, it was becoming pretty rapid, like more rapid than the rest of the trip, to the point where I had to like cut it out of my videos because I couldn't even like fit it all in. It was like too much, you know? So I'm just like, I see a family. They lived on the road I was passing. They follow me on bikes. I'm talking with them. And then there's a skate shop owner. He's got a lineup of people, like 20 people with signs when I come into town. So I stop and talk with them. They want me to hit the park. I'm like, sorry, guys. Like, I got like some people waiting for me, my girlfriend. Like, I've been on the road. I kind of got to finish. So just keep going. Actually, the owner kept skating with me, and I like felt bad. So I like went to his skate shop and like, because I wanted to like feature his shop. He came out and visited. So popped in there real quick. I'm like, all right, I got to go.
I like your that part of your mind, like content. Like we gotta get this content.
Yep. And then keep going. And then I'm worried about going over a bridge because I don't know if it's illegal or not. So I don't want Guinness to like disqualify me. So I'm trying to call people. Next thing I know, I get to the bridge and there's police escorts.
No way.
Yeah. So they're like following me over the bridge. People are filming with cameras, following me over.
Police escort across the, and this is in Virginia.
Yeah, it's in Virginia. Yep. Last day.
What was that like?
They were just down. They were psyched. Everyone's laughing. It was a trip. I'm just looking at this beautiful scenery. It's like unreal. I'm looking at these like cops next to me. My friend's there filming me for the documentary. I'm just like laughing, looking at this crazy view. Like, it's really happening.
Surreal. You mentioned girlfriend.
Yep.
Now, for most people that are in a relationship, like, you know, asking your partner to support you to go and do a thing for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month maybe, it's like, whew, okay. She or they or whoever like really love me. But this is 2 months.
Yep.
What was that conversation like to when you say to your partner, like, I love you, but I have to do this. I imagine it went something like that.
Well, all right. So this wasn't the first time I'd done a trip like this. So I was kind of used to it.
She knew she was with.
Yeah, I went to every country in Central America for 2 months, kind of like exploring the skate scene over there, making vlogs.
Solo.
Interviewing people, stuff like that. Completely solo. Mm. Just me and a backpack.
Right.
Then I went to Ukraine for a month for a nonprofit. And just we set up like a little skate camp for refugees and taught there for free for a month.
In the midst of the war?
Yeah.
Okay.
This was like in October.
All right.
So she's, you know, that's a pretty scary thing to be like, yeah, go ahead, you know. But all these things she's never questioned. She never was like, you sure you don't want to like do something safer? Not even that. She was always supportive. She'd ask questions. She'd be worried for sure, but she never was like against it.
She also could have been like, what about me?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a long time to be away. But I think she just understands like how important it is to me and, you know, even my sobriety.
Right.
Yeah, like it's my passion. You know, what good is a relationship if you're telling someone not to do the thing that they love the most for yourself? You know, it's a selfish thing. It's not like working together, you know?
That's powerful, man. That's some deep relationship advice that I'm sure some people who are listening or watching are thinking to themselves, like, could I do that for my partner for whatever it is that they need to do?
I heard that all the time. Girlfriends would be like, I would never let my boyfriend.
I would never let my guy do that.
I heard that all the time. Yeah.
Hmm. Hmm? Well, you're what's her name?
Shannon.
Shannon.
Yep.
Shannon, you're the real MVP.
She is.
You're the real MVP out here setting standards.
She really is. And while I'm like, because I'm like, you know, I do this without planning all this stuff. I'm like, so she's there like trying to book hotels, look things up that I'm like looking past. So she was a huge help.
She was she was logistics production.
Yep, exactly.
Support crew from afar.
Yeah.
So you were still in partnership. It's not like you went and did this thing and she wasn't in partnership.
Exactly. Yeah, she was a part of it. She had my live tracking every day. If I didn't turn it on, she'd kind of like freak out. Naturally.
Yeah. So it wasn't like just go and I'll see you. It's like I care.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna be with you as with you as I can.
Exactly.
Be.
Yeah. And she was helping with everything.
Take us through that last mile.
Okay.
Into Virginia Beach.
So, yeah, cop actually rolls up on a board, starts skating with me. Bunch of people now there's like cameras, golf carts, all sorts of stuff. The crowd's just getting bigger and bigger, and I can't believe this.
Throw a number at
this. I thought before I got there, like people were asking me, like, should I come down? I'm like, I don't know. It'll probably be like 8 to 10 people there. Like, I don't know. We'll see. I feel like there'll be more people at the festival, the Jackalope Fest.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it won't be that big. I'm like, there's like 20 people skating with me, maybe 30. I don't even know. It just keeps building and building. I'm filming this just like laughing in disbelief. And at points, I'm like holding in tears. Like, I can't believe that support. I was just not expecting it. Mm. And that same thing just kept happening as I got closer because the numbers kept growing. And then I see this huge crowd, 100, 200 people. I don't even know. There's a banner with my name on it. Just like, what? Just laughing. I just can't stop just hysterically laughing, filming everything. So skate through the sign. This whole crowd of people lined up, skate through all of them. Mayor holds his hand up. I happen to not see him because I'm just so tunnel vision. I just skate right by him. He's just like holding his hand up. Right by him, I go straight into the ocean, just run, front flip in. That was like I beelined it for there, you know?
Mm. Is your girl there?
She's there, yeah. And then I get rushed at the shore by the news crew. They just like immediately, I'm not even out of the water yet.
Right, and you haven't even gotten to hug your girl?
Nothing. So they're sitting there. Now their feet are getting soaked because they're like everyone wants to get the story, so right. Get closest. And kind of felt weird because I'm by myself for months, and then I just get like bombarded, people just like wanting my story, like, you know what I mean? It's like immediately. But it was cool. Yeah, I was like kind of just in shock by the whole thing.
What's it like when you finally lock eyes with your lady?
Yeah, I couldn't even really process it. Like, I gave her the hug and the kiss, and everyone's filming, but it didn't like really sink in, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm seeing her and holding her, but yeah. It's more of like when you finally get to spend time and it's like back to normal.
Right.
You know? It was like such a shock, you know?
I remember on your Instagram, you know, seeing those images, and you look like what you describe, like a little bit of disbelief, shock. It's over. What you're describing is this really high. But I wanted to ask you, like, what's the backslide or the backside of something that you've been living in this like in-depth focus? You basically developed in real time this mental fortitude that's allowed you to just tunnel in on something to the point where the rest of your body and your spirit has no choice but to follow for 2 months. If you did it for 2 days, I'd be like, yeah, you did 110 miles on your skateboard. That's amazing.
Yeah.
But you did this for 2 months. What is what's that emotional backside like?
Just to touch on the high, though, real quick. I built up to this thing for so long.
Right.
You know, it's like 2 years in the making, basically, you know, and then 2 months on the road, completely solo, all the people talking, like, you know what I mean? So when it comes to that culmination, you're like, you can't believe you did it. I don't know. It's just tough to process. But yeah, coming down, it wasn't as bad as I thought. Everyone kept asking, like, are you okay? Like, you gonna be okay? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It felt normal that next day, not vlogging. I was happy to be not vlogging, you know, and I didn't even feel compelled to go skate, probably because I was like super sore. And that soreness lasted for a month. Like, I'm still like not even fully better in my feet. But as far as like the coming down, how can you replace that high? You know what I mean? So I want to do videos, but at the same time, I'm just like, really? You're going to put that out? Like, kind of need something like, what's next? Like a bigger thing. But that's not really the case. You put yourself in that box, but, you know, everyone's human. You got to be able to just do normal things and carry on every day, you know? So it was a little bit of an adjustment period, like the excitement kind of balancing out, went back to work. Like, I work on a food truck. So I'm just like,
back
doing
to
that.
It.
Yeah.
And you're serving people food and they're like, thanks.
Yeah.
And you're like, hey, I just...
Exactly.
Hey, do you know who made that? I just skateboarded across America. Did you didn't know?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah. And people are coming up to me saying all these things, and I feel almost like a fraud. I'm just like, all these people are here for me? Like, you're like, coming up to me asking, like, it just feels unreal because I've been doing it for so long. It just feels normal.
Right.
You know, I feel like I didn't even do anything. Even still, really, I'm just. You know what I mean?
I have some news for you. not normal. And I think that without knowing your backstory, it already struck me, because in the Jenkum article, they don't talk about really the sobriety aspect too much. Like, you got to get down into it. And I read the first half of it, and then I read it again to find out that part. But just. You watching your videos, I'm just like, this is just a regular dude. He's not out for any sort of. There was nothing about the way you were storytelling that said you were looking for recognition. You just were doing a thing that you were compelled to do. But when I read another article in Dose Skateboarding, where you really talk about what that journey was like for sobriety, and then. Having this conversation with you. You said before, like, I've been, you know, training for this for 2 years, but I think back to what we talked about at the beginning of this guy who gets the second DUI, breaks his arm, realizes the manner in which his I'm going to run away from the world and don't care is not just affecting himself, but all these people around him, this domino effect of avoiding life through substance. And then making this choice to be like, no. And same thing that I've had with me, skateboarding, I'm not going to abandon. I'm going to keep with me. And I feel it feels like you've been on a, like it was a 6-year journey.
Yeah.
To get to that moment. And when I look at it from that arc, man, it's just, it's deeply, deeply inspiring for myself, for when I think about just sometimes the little goals that seem so hard to get to. And like you talked about before, there's all these things that sort of fly in our lives that are distractions that we begin to we just feel are necessary because they're in our lives every day, but in actuality, yep, they're not. And my favorite part of your story that I think I have the most envy for is being able to just be so locked in with yourself where distraction isn't an option. And what are we capable of as human beings if we can push out the bullshit, like get rid of the unneeded of distractions, like what we can find out about who we are.
100%. Yeah, it's there for everyone. You know, it's just a matter of like if you're ready to go down that path. And, you know, it's scary. You're going to face a lot of things, make you feel uncomfortable, you know, but once you go through that pain and feel it, it's like gone. Like you almost evolve past it. You know what I mean? It's not like this looming thing anymore that you're like hiding from. You process it, you feel it, you examine it, and that's it. And you start continually doing that until they almost don't exist anymore. And you're more just like locked into the present and what's going on.
Like a comfort, a deep comfort within the discomfort.
Yeah.
But on the outside, you're like, I'm not going in there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And you get in there and you're like, oh, wait, like there's a different access to a different part of peace almost within this discomfort.
100%.
What would you say is the biggest thing that you, I know you said, oh, I've done so many different versions of what this is, but what is the biggest thing that you've learned about yourself from this particular journey?
I'd say, I mean, just the resolve that I can do anything. If I have an idea, I could do it. After going through that, like I've done other things leading up to it, very challenging things. I did this thing where I did 50 tricks in 50 states, 50 days in a row. So I had like similar challenges I would set up for myself. But yeah, this one, just being out there, it just reinforced that. It's like, if you have something you want to do, you can make it happen. It's just a matter of you focusing on it and getting rid of the distractions and being honest with yourself. Like, do you need this? Is this for clout? Like all the things that you're, you know, kind of the sticky things in society that you like think you need. Yeah. You get rid of those and then you'll have your answers.
Speaking of doing anything you want, I checked on your Instagram yesterday and you look like you did something pretty amazing that you you wanted to do where you got engaged to your girl.
Yep. Actually, it was kind of spontaneous too. I bought the ring like the day before heading out here. Just like everywhere I was calling was saying it takes like 2-3 weeks to get the ring. So I just like went around, made it happen. And then, yeah, took her to like a very scenic place and proposed. She had no idea.
It looked like you'd set up like a selfie photo.
Yep. Yeah, I was pretending we were just going to take a selfie. Yeah. So she, you could literally in the video see her gasp.
I like, saw it.
Yeah.
I saw it. Like, yeah, you're coming in for the photo. No, she's like, waiting to take the pose. Like, wait, what's happening here? Yep. What's that completion feel like? Especially on.
Yeah. I mean, like you were saying too, like, she's unbelievable to be down with me doing all of this stuff for all these years. Like, how could I not want to be with her forever?
You got to lock that down.
100%. I mean,
that is ride or die to the highest end.
100%.
What's next?
Working on a documentary about it. It's pretty close to being done. I have a TV show trying to get everything together, all the episodes, and like pitch that. Other than that, I have like no challenges or anything on the horizon. Might not skate for a while. We'll see.
Okay.
Yeah.
And for folks that want to stay engaged with you for the next chapters, your creative exploits, etc. How can they hang with you?
Everything's just YouTube, Chad Caruso, Instagram, YouTube, a little bit of TikTok. Sometimes I'm not on there too much, but yeah.
Right on.
Hell yeah.
Chad, first of all, thank you for answering my DM.
Dude, thanks for having me on.
I mean, yeah. I had a feeling. I was like, this dude is it. There's a there beyond this thing, and I'm so glad that I took the chance and had the idea to see, like, I just assumed everyone and their mother was trying to get a hold of you, and you'd be like, yeah, bro, like, everybody wants to talk to me, so thanks, but no thanks.
That's funny. I actually answer almost every single DM I've ever gotten. On the trip, though, I couldn't. Like, I tried my hardest to keep up. I just couldn't.
Yeah.
But, of course, man. I'm honored that you reached out and psyched to be on.
It is an honor, and we will be following you. And if there's anything else that you have going on in the future and you want to come out and talk with us again, please, man. We will be keeping track on what's next, man. But thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Awesome. It takes a village to bring you the What Shapes Us podcast. Our incredible graphic design team at Parsons Branding. Music by the one and only Hugh Masekela and my band Alakazam. Produced by yours truly, Salema Mabena Masekela, and directed by Ernesto Hurtado, a.k.a. Machete, and myself, Salema Masekela. The What Shapes Us podcast is a Rebel Talk Network production. Stick to the pace, you're a rat in the race. That's all you can give, but ain't all that it takes. Put your money on the wall, but it won't buy taste. Surprised to catch shine when you stop to embrace. Breathe, don't wanna watch you go under. Fly, don't wanna see you burn. Please, they're gonna take your thunder. Why you wanna miss your turn? Easy, don't paint by numbers. Fortune only favors the bold. Sweat, no money, no motion. Plant these trees of coffee and gold.